This is an ABC podcast.
This is Neat and Footy with Sam Wykes and Tinidar Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
Come na Māori to our Ikiribas listeners and welcome everyone to Neat and Footy, the best spot for our Pacifica footy news and stories in the Rugby League and Rugby Union worlds. My name's Tinirau Aorona, and alongside me each week is my koi, Sammy Wykes. Sammy,
Big T.
Welcome back, brother.
Always good to be here. Mate, how'd your tipping go this week in league? Mate, it feels like it's tough.
Very tough. I said it this morning on Ninja Daily that if you have got all your picks right over the last few weeks,
you're a champion.
You're a genius.
You're a genius, absolutely.
There are upsets everywhere. But yeah, a huge show today, Sammy.
Yeah, we do. Super W final on the weekend. Waratahs back-to-back. They were in control of that game. Congratulations to them, but we'll go through that with Shelley. She'll be on to chat all things rugby league and rugby union. Moana and the Drua went down again on the weekend. So it was a tough loss for both of those teams. NRL round six, awesome. Again, what we talked about, some upsets, some tight wins as well. And our guest today is a massive Tongan. Like, we get some massive people on our show, but he is huge. Giovanni Manu is a Tongan NFL player with the Detroit Lions. 136 kilos as a 12-year-old T. That's right. As a 12-year-old.
136 kilos.
As a 12-year-old.
At 12 years old.
Yep. Grew up in Tonga and moved to Canada for his schooling. So I think that's going to be a fascinating chat. And
what
I can't wait for that one.
What a pathway. How do you get from Tonga to Canada then into the NFL?
Hey, well, let's find out when we interview him.
Moment of the week.
Each Monday we start our week with Moment of the Week. And today, Sammy, you've got our moment.
I do. It's in Rugby Union and it's the Pacific Hall of Fame. I think it's only been going for the last couple of years. It's a new initiative for, you know, recognising our Pacifica talent.
Who did we see last year?
Big Jonah Lomu was in there. I think it's an initiative from Sir Michael Jones as well. So he didn't induct himself last year, even though he should have been in there. So he's waited till the second year to put himself in.
Still pinch myself knowing that we had Sir Michael Jones here on Nation Footy. And remember, if you want to hear that chat with the great Michael Jones, you can find that wherever you get your podcasts. But this Hall of Fame, Sammy.
Yeah, so big names. Tanu Umanga, he's doing an amazing job with Moana Pacifica, but what a legend of the game. So he was inducted into the 2025 inductees with Big Willie O, Willie Ofengawe, Monique Hirovana, she's from the Cook Islands, Sarah Maya Bai, Malakai Alatini, Sir Michael Jones, and Big Tuinga Mala. He was the man as well back in the day. So that all of them got inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Sir Michael Jones put himself, his name forward, or how did that work out?
He put his name forward through his efforts, you know, back in the day.
He should have already been.
His first pick there with Jonah. But
what about our good friend Totai?
No start for the big man.
No Totai Kefu
for
yet.
For our Japanese king
coming,
over there.
It's coming.
It's coming. He'll get next year for sure. But there was also some other awards as well. Female Player of the Year and Male Player of the Year. Male Player of the Year was Tevita Ikanevere from the Drua. Well deserved. He killed it last year. And Manusina Captain. She was amazing as well. Masui Sui Matamali'i. How did I go there with the pronunciation? All over it?
I don't know. I'm not Samoan.
But I'm sure that she's a freak of a player. And she killed it last year. So well deserved. And the breakthrough players of the year was Wallace Setiti from the Chiefs, number 8. And Sylvia Brunt as well. Breakout player of the years.
Some great acknowledgements across the Pacific for our rugby union players and also past rugby union players. So great work picking that one up, Sammy.
Hello, Falava. One Pacific greetings. Hi, I'm Monsieur Michael Jones, and you're listening to Nijan Footy.
There he is.
Softly spoken, eh? I can't imagine, like,
what,
you know,
gentleman.
He, talking to him like that, and then he absolutely ices you.
Well, let's head straight into footy results and news, and I'll kick us off with our rugby league round six. And on Friday, we did cover that huge upset where the Dolphins beat the four-peat champions, the Panthers. But today, I wanted to talk about two of the clubs that I got to represent. not because they are my ex-clubs, but also the importance of these games. And you know, I just think that with these results could set them up nicely for the rest of the season. Now, I'll start with the Sydney Roosters. They went up to Brisbane. They beat the Broncos 26-16. Now, with the Roosters, very similar to the Panthers with the amount of departing players and how they've had to overcome, you know, the names like Joey Manu, Joseph Suli'i, Sitili Tuponua. But with this game against the Brisbane Broncos, you could see the culture, the togetherness, definitely from the start. You know, they set the tone by the way they carried the ball. Usually you see the Brisbane Broncos, you know, quite dominant in the middle, but they went at it, kicked to the corner, and what impressed me the most was their defense. You know, the way that they got to, the way they handled Payne Huss and Paddy Carrigan, you know, two of their big enforcers. Now, I want to remind everyone as well that the Roosters played the Broncos only 5 weeks ago in round one. Now, in round one, Payne Huss, he ran for 242 meters. In this round, only 167 meters. And then same as Paddy Carrigan, he ran for 242 meters in round one. On this weekend, he only ran for 59 meters. So what that tells me is that they really limited their impact in the game. And I always say attitude and defense, you know, if you've got your defense down pat, you're usually a long way. You're going to be that dominant team in the game.
So when you say they were able to stop those two players in their track and so they didn't get as many meters this time around, is that just through, I know it's defense, but is that getting line speed or is that finding their kicking game in certain parts of the field where they've got to work back to a corner where they've got a stronger line? How do you nullify those two big guys, or is it just numbers in the tackle?
Yeah, you're right, Sam. I mean, there's a bit of a cycle now. They had a new halfback, Hugo Savala, start, and his kicking game, the way that he got the ball behind Reece Walsh, now that cycle starts with the kick and then also the kick chase and then winning those first couple rucks. You know, you win those first couple rucks, well, it means that your defensive line gets to get set. Your line speed, you know, they get off the line, they meet them at the advantage line, they have that contact and they limit the meters that the Brisbane Broncos can make. But I want to give a big shout out to a couple of the players that I'm liking at the moment. First one is Salesi Fokiti. At only 19 years old, you know, he's made his debut in round one against the Brisbane Broncos.
Now, and killed it round one too.
And that's in a pretty dominant game from the Broncos. So he ended up playing over half the game, so 41 minutes, took 11 carries, but at only 19 years old and still, you know, starting to make a name for himself in the NRL. Now Fahu White is the other one, you know, replacing the names like Jared Wader Hargraves. He's becoming that player in the middle, that enforcer, the one who has to do a lot of the work. So great work to those two players, and also Billy Smith, the centre. He went on to score two brilliant individual tries for the Roosters that led them to their victory.
So now Roosters laterally to the left, but no great gain on the carry. Played there by Lenu. Watson blindside left, gives to Tedesco. Grubber early in the set. Billy Smith gathers, dots down before the dead ball line. It's another Billy Smith trick. He's been brilliant with his skill in this first half. A second try for Billy and the Roosters. That's 12 all kick to come.
Yeah, Billy Smith, he's actually had some tough injuries in the past couple of years, but he is an outstanding centre. Scored some good tries, as you said, T. Wrapping up that game, purely was it just defence? Was that the mindset? Is that where you feel like the Roosters, even though they don't have the star quality players, do you think moving forward that it's just going to be a defensive team?
Yeah, knowing Trent Robinson, you know, he's a defensive coach, so he'd be quite impressed with the efforts and the attitude. Defense is an attitude, which leads me into my next game, which are the Sharks versus the Seagulls, where the Sharks defeated Manly in Perth 24-18. Now, again, defense, the Seagulls had the momentum the majority of that first half. And the way the Sharks, you know, turned up defensively really set the tone for what was to come for the rest of this game. Now, it was still nil all 30 minutes into the game, and what you have to give credit to is the Sharks' outside backs, their back five. You know, you got Will Kennedy, Sam Stone Street, Jesse Ramien, Mawini Hiroti, and Ronaldo Molitalo. So I've been a big believer in your outside backs. You've got a strong outside back line. Their job is to get your team out of their end. So by winning those first two carries. Now defensively you want to stop it, but on the other end in attack, you have to try and, you know, win the momentum. Now you look back in the 2016 grand final where the Sharks won. That team, they had Siafeki, Ricky Lutelli, Gerard Bill, Valentine Holmes, and Ben Barber. Now remember, they had this, their call was kamikaze. So no respect for your body. You run as hard as you can.
In defense.
The ad line. No, in attack.
Oh, in attack. Okay, sorry.
So their job is to get them on the front foot.
Yep.
You know, you think of Brian Toto, the way that he carries and breaks the line. It just sets the momentum up for the rest of that set so that you get a good kick. You get a good kick to the corner, and then your middles can defend. So that's what they've done here. Look, Sam Stone Street, he scored a double just before halftime. And I just think it's really important to have, you know, some strong outside backs if you are going to be successful in this competition.
Hines now across to Trindle. He can kick after that he passes. Stone Street onto it. More Trindle brilliance. He set the first try up with a pass out wide from dummy half. And this time the kick was perfect for his winger. Two try assists for Braden Trindle. Two tries for Sam Stone Street.
And a couple of other results across the NRL. The Storm, very dominant against the New Zealand Warriors, 42-14. And the Tigers continue to impress the rest of the competition. 20-4, they beat the Newcastle Knights.
I saw that game. Newcastle, I don't know how many mistakes they made coming out of their end, but it was a truckload. They just couldn't hold on to the ball, just couldn't get any momentum. But the Tigers, they're on the up. They're in seventh, I think, at the moment. And in top eight. But hey, forgot to mention as well, Halmole, 100th game. Big congrats to him over there in Perth.
And remember, you can hear every NRL game live on ABC Radio Australia. And in the Queensland Cup, the PNG Hunters lost in a tight one to Ipswich, 22-20. Jamie Mavoko had a conversion to lock up the scores in the 78th minute, but couldn't do it. He missed the conversion, Sammy. They remain sixth on the ladder and play Burley Bears next weekend back in home, the homeland, Port Moresby. New South Wales jersey flag, the Cavite Silktails, they lost to the Bulldogs at Belmore on the weekend, 44-14. They play the top of the table Storm this weekend coming. Sammy, how was the game on the weekend down at Belmore?
Oh, I missed it, actually.
Oh, of course.
Do you know why? Because I actually ran a 10K fun run. It was supposed to be 5K, and I was going to go after that, but I took a wrong turn.
When?
On Saturday.
Did I ask? Oh, no.
I'm telling you why I would have been there, but it took ages for me to finish.
Sons do to me all the time.
It's kids these days. Their lingo.
Anyway, how'd you go? 10K? What?
Yeah, 54 minutes, but no one's asking.
Oh, beautiful.
It's not bad, under an hour, but yeah, nah, tough on the
legs. I was wondering why you're limping in today.
My back's tight, but she'll be right, mates. Is that all we have time for in rugby league?
That's
done?
All, mate. That is all. Beautiful. Off to rugby union.
All right, let's get into rugby union. It definitely wasn't a good weekend for our Pacific Island brothers in round 9 of Super Rugby Pacific. Both the Fijian Drua and Wanda Pacifica went down to Kiwi opposition. And we'll start with the Fijian Drua. They went down to the Highlanders 43-20, which leaves the Drua on the bottom of the table with only the one win this year, one win out of the 9 games. So they're in a tough spot.
How many more Fijian games brothers left?
I think there's about 6 or 7 weeks left. But yeah, they've got some home games. That's a positive. They've got a run of home games, and it starts this weekend. Against the Waratahs at Churchill Park, so hopefully they can get a win there. But it's not looking good, and I think if we look at that game, like last week against the Crusaders, the Highlanders, they just used their kicking game and they were just happy to defend and pretty much only keep the ball in hand when they got into the attack in 50, and that was it. And this stat pretty much sums it up. The Highlanders, 215 tackles to the Drua's 73 tackles. So they were just happy to let the Drua play, but you have to play from the back half, other end of your in that half.
Do you think, you know, I'm just thinking of each team, they'll do their review of, sorry, their preview of that team the weekend before.
Yep.
So the teams that have beat Drua, all those teams preparing for Drua, they'll just say, okay, this is how you
this
beat
the blueprint.
Drua.
This is the blueprint. Exactly.
To the corner. And you just, because it seems like you've been mentioning the same thing.
Yeah,
each
it is.
Week.
And you're not wrong, T. Like, it's pretty much teams now know that when you play against a draw, don't go away from your game plan. Just don't go away from winning the territory battle through kicking and being prepared to defend. But also, this is where probably teams got a little bit loose within that game plan in the past, is that now teams aren't getting disheartened if the draw score a freakish try. Because they're going to score two or three tries from
offloads
or kick turn. It's risky play.
Yeah.
And they're going to do that. So, and we saw that. The Highlanders, you know, they stuck to their plan so well. But in the second half, a kick didn't go to plan. And then Rumbitul scores 50 metres to score. Then Logani Masi, he scores a 50-metre try. So teams are actually happy. Yeah, you score those tries that would definitely be in the tries of the year at some point. I reckon they're going to have five entries for sure in the try of the year. But what they need to make sure is that they don't score tries from any type of structured play. So making sure that if you're scoring tries, we're happy for you to score from 50 metres out, but nothing where you're building phases or you're scoring from scrum or you're scoring from line out. So that's just been the theme. And I think moving forward for the Drua, it's either they get better at their own game plan and keeping the ball in hand, or they find a plan B. What's your thoughts? You know, when teams have one way of playing, their certain way, and when it gets taken away from them, do they have to find a plan B, or do they just get better at what they're good at?
I think looking at their results, you'd have to change. You'd have to find a different game plan. Yeah, you could, because they're plan A is, sorry, I mentioned high percentage earlier, it's low percentage play. So you have to take more risks to score them tries where, you know, eventually the long, so you think long game over the 80 minutes of footy, it's not going to work out for you if that other team sticks to his game plan. So I'm thinking change
something.
Plan.
Well, you're not wrong, because they keep the ball in hand, their handling errors have been high this year. And so when it doesn't come their way, it's like they're trying to force to play that style. When they're desperate and behind on the scoreline, and you know, that pressure's building through mistakes.
I will quickly mention too, like, defending's not fun.
It's not, but it works.
So Fiji probably love that they got the ball, but they're just not getting in on the front foot.
Yeah.
Good for the other teams where they have to defend heaps.
I will soon find out this weekend. But a special mention to Highlanders winger Daniela Filimone, Tongan heritage, on debut, first touch of the game, scores a try. Second touch of the game, he scores another try.
So, On debut.
First two touches for him, he scores a try. And I thought scrum half Falau Fakatava was outstanding as well for the Highlanders. Minor Pacifica, we'll get to them now. Weren't able to make it. Three wins in a row, losing 36-17 against the Auckland Blues. This game, I just thought the Blues made more of a statement around what you said, defence. Physicality, they were up for it. They won the gain line in defence by getting really good connection, coming off the line, and the strength for Minor Pacifica have been their ball carriers, getting through contact. Now, the Blues knew their assignment.
Did it have that bit of energy with the Blues, like, we're the big brother here?
Yes, it did.
You're coming into our land.
It definitely
did. And
we're going
to try and make a statement and bully you out of, like, we're the big brother here, you're the small brother.
Yeah, some of the first, and I thought that was the biggest difference, like their first up contacts were solid. They were getting in there and they were hitting, sticking, and then there was numbers in the tackle and they were slowing their ball down. And off the back of that, there was just some smart kicking. They went into the half 24-5 up. And I guess as a fan, Minor fan, or all the Minor fans were hoping that Minor were going to have one of those strong second half performances like they've been having all year. But it just wasn't the case. The Blues were relentless and very clinical, just doing the same thing. So, yeah, I'm keen to see what the selection looks like for this week.
You know what it is? It's that social media when they come out of the sheds and they're all carrying on.
It's worked for them the last 2 weeks, though. The hype. But we should make a special mention as well to Samoan centre for the Blues, AJ Lamb, 50th cap for the Blues. That's all this week for Super Rugby Pacific T. We're going to get to Sevens. Sevens, did you watch it on the weekend, the Challenger Series?
Yes.
It was in Poland. Did you get up early for that one?
I reckon. I wonder how many people across the Pacific watch this one. But that's why we're here, to keep you updated.
Exactly right. It was a big weekend for Samoa, who made the men's final. And although they lost to Portugal, it meant they finished in the top four and will get to play in LA for the chance to make the main series. Tonga came up seventh in Poland. And, well, oh man, it pains me to say it, but they'll miss out on the chance to play in LA and make the main series. But they did beat Samoa in that competition. So there's a little victory.
So they won the battle, but they lost the war.
The war, exactly. Exactly. So we'll see how Samoa go. Good luck to them in the main series.
Great work, Sammy. Well, let's head over to Shelley Long to cover all things Women Rugby League and Rugby Union.
Hey, it's Wolf Skelton here, and you're listening to Asian Footy.
The Long Story Short with Shelley Long.
Every week, every Monday, we welcome back Shelley Long, our PNG Orchid star and NRLW player. Shell, how was your week?
It's been really good. I know I always sound very bright and bubbly on the Monday, but it was extremely good. I had my first run last week, which was exciting.
That's good.
I did see that. It looked like Bambi, did you know? Newborn deer coming out. No, I'm joking.
Wow. How'd you feel?
Oh, great. I definitely felt like I was galloping a little bit, you know.
See, I wasn't right. No, you look good out there. I'm joking.
But I had my third run of the week yesterday, and it felt a lot smoother. I think, you know, it's like riding a bike again. Just you have a few little hiccups, and then you're riding smooth. So I think that's what's happened.
Full range of movement now in your leg?
Yep, full range of movement now. Saw the surgeon too on Thursday, and he said I won't need to see him until the 12-month mark. So that's super exciting. It was very positive, and everything's heading in the right direction.
Great to hear. It's actually really good news, and it's probably why you're feeling very positive, and I like to feel that energy, so thank you. And let's kick us off. Super Rugby, what do you got for us?
So the Super Rugby Women's Grand Final was played on Saturday, and it was an absolute crowd hyper. We saw the New South Wales Waratahs take on the Queensland Reds in that Grand Final. The New South Wales Waratahs defeated Queensland Reds 43 points to 21, another high-scoring game. But it did see the New South Wales Waratahs clinch their sixth Super W Women's Premiership. Now, Sam, we did say that we were thinking they were going to win in that game. Any takes?
Yeah, well, T's celebrating here. He tipped the Tars.
I just remembered the third tipping. That's right.
Game from Friday, Nijan Footy. I thought, yeah, the Reds were primed to probably, you know, cause the upset. But, yeah, the Waratahs, they were too classy. Like, even though it got close there for a little bit, I just felt like the Tars were always in control, and they just managed the outside channels really well. Like, Miller, she was a star, but, like, they were just able to find space on those edges. And, just wasn't the Reds' day. They made the grand from last year. They were last year, so it's positive for the Reds.
Oh, were they?
Yeah, no good last year.
Last to the grand final.
Yeah, so positive improvements for the Reds, but the Waratahs have now set the bar high for their other competitors. That's now their sixth win out of 10 games in the grand final. So it's pretty impressive to see the Waratahs just continuing to rise and dominate in the Super W competition. Unfortunately for the Reds, and you've got to talk about the losses when you talk about the wins. That makes it number five for grand final losses, which is very unfortunate. But I think they've headed in the right direction with what they've done this year. You know, they stood out. They definitely challenged a lot of teams. And I think it's probably just fixing up a few errors that they've made throughout the season.
I felt for PNG winger for the Reds, their co-captain, Ivania Wong, in her interview after the game, she was shattered. I'm pretty sure she's been there for all five losses as well.
Oh, no.
Oh, so she was heartbroken, just trying to, find the positives and just, speak gracefully, but she was choking back or holding back the tears. But
probably confident going in there as well.
They would have, out of all the years, this would have been their chance to, get that win, but it wasn't meant to be.
And I think they've had a lot of great signings this year that really made them challenge a lot of teams. Eva Kapani, for me, again, another outstanding prop for the Reds. Great signing there. But also the amount of sevens players that came throughout that season to help contribute to their wins, I thought really made them shine a little as well. But on that weekend, like you said, Sam, the edges, they really struggled to defend a strong Waratahs side, and we did see Miller go through quite a bit and absolutely dominate there. But Waratahs prop Feliki Pohiva, she was again outstanding. She charged through the middle to score her try, and how about getting a meat pie in a grand final? That would have been incredible for her and put definitely a smile on her face as well.
Three props scored in that game. Pohiva, Kapani and Taufua. It's unheard of prop scoring tries like that, especially in a grand final. So really good depth and talent in the front row for Australia.
Yes. And now the New South Wales Waratahs will play their first ever Trans-Tasman Championship game against the Blues on Thursday in New Zealand. So that is super exciting. It's the first ever time that this has ever been done. And I think it will definitely go to show where we're at in terms of Australia versus New Zealand in rugby union. There's a lot of spectacular talent over in our Trans-Tasman in New Zealand. But I think the Waratahs will have a challenge at their hands.
Mm. Do you ever think that there would be a competition where the New Zealand and the Australian women's come together?
It has to be on the horizon. At some point, I think finance is the main barrier, getting that sorted. Then you've got to think Pernina Pacifica is supposed to be coming in there as well. So hopefully we do get to see that, but at least this is a good stepping stone first to be able to see who's a genuine winner from both competitions, from the Aupiki New Zealand comp and now Super Rugby Women's here in Australia. Tight turnaround though, Thursday. I don't know, I don't think they were celebrating too much, even though they were celebrating the win, but after it would have just been eyes on the next job. What's your thoughts here with that turnaround next Thursday?
It's very interesting, and obviously we're looking at international travel. The Blues, they do get to remain at home, so it'll be interesting to see how fatigued the Waratahs are after their, you know, heavy game in the grand final. I think both teams will be a little bit battered, but again, I think, you know, the women's competition is a gritty game, and I think we're built for it. So it'll be exciting to see how that goes.
Yeah, nice. And then we move into the test match arena for the women's game as well for rugby. We got the Wallaroos play Fijiana on May 3rd in a doubleheader I think the draw play the Reds, so they'll play after that game. So I think the Wallaroos announcement will be today at some point. So let's see if how many of our Pacific Stars get into that one over there. But anything else you got for us in rugby before we shift over?
That's everything for today.
Beautiful.
In rugby? Let's head to rugby league. The good stuff. What you got for us, Shelley?
So Shannon Martel has recently announced her pregnancy. Martel will miss the 2025 NRLW season. Martel's announcement now makes it the sixth pregnancy in the NRLW for 2025, which is super exciting and shows a massive change and improvement within the NRLW policy. So I'll probably touch a little bit about that policy because I feel like not too many people are familiar with the new NRL pregnancy policy that was added when in the recent CBA. So the policy protects the players whilst under contract in pre and post pregnancy. The policy doesn't just protect them from their salary, it also helps them with their recovery, their return to play, and also when they're travelling during the season. So that's super exciting as well. We have seen several mums receive that extra support when in the season, which is great to see. And also when a player announces their pregnancy, the player is then moved into a role within the club, and that club can then add a replacement player of equal value back into the squad. So a lot of great things with this new CBA, especially around women and the pregnancy policies.
Some great news. You love to hear it, and well done to the team at the RLPA.
I was going to say, when's he still going to pat himself on the back of their team over there? So that's six players, yeah, did you say?
Yeah, and I think with this new, well, with the CBA that came out, I think it broke down a lot of barriers that women face when wanting to be a professional athlete, and having that security in place has really helped. And I think it can definitely be shown with the amount of players that are now able to start a family while being professional athletes as well. So super exciting, and I feel like the game is definitely taking a very positive turn for women.
Yep, you're not wrong. Now we got some big news. The Queensland Origin squad has been announced. What stands out for you, Shell?
I think what stands out for me is the Queensland Origin squad has announced five eligible debutants for game one. That's super exciting. We do also see three Pacifica players in there with Destiny Brill, Sienna Lafipo, and Tavana Papali'i announced in the game one squad. So definitely a lot of changes and a lot of youth to this squad as well, which I think is great. You know, I think these three players, Destiny, Sienna, and Tavana, have all played really well in the NRLW, and I think they'll definitely add that bit of youthful flavour to the squad.
I'm actually going to head to that first game. That's held in Brisbane just before Magic Weekend, or it kicks off Magic Round in the NRL. So,
good squad on paper though. Like, is that compared to last year? Are we saying on paper that's even better?
I don't reckon you can.
You can't judge on it.
Judge on it, because you look at last year, and even then, like, Queensland come away with the series. So, what are your thoughts, Shell?
I think it's a very interesting approach. I'm very interested to see where they're named in position wise, because when you look at the announcement, they haven't been named in 1 to 19. They've just been named, I think, in alphabetical order. So they're not giving away too many hints there.
Time will tell on that one. That's all we have time for, Shelley. Amazing work as always, and we'll catch you next week.
Great work, Shell.
Thanks, guys.
Nijan Footy with Sam and T.
Well, with the growing popularity of NFL among rugby league and rugby union players looking to potentially make the switch, I feel like our next guest is probably the perfect person to give us an in-depth look at what it really takes to make it in the NFL. Standing in at 201 centimetres, about 160 kilos. He was born in Nuku'alofa, Tonga, moved to Canada at the age of 11 and was selected as the 126th pick in the fourth round of the 2024 NFL Draft by the Detroit Lions. The big man joins us right now, Giovanni Manu Malotalava. Thank you for joining Nijan Footy.
Hello. Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate you guys making the time to do this.
No, we appreciate you, bro. Man, honestly, that journey from Tonga into the NFL, it's going to be an incredible story. I can't wait to get into it. But we'll start with your childhood. You were born in Tonga on the tiny island in the kingdom. Now, what do you remember about your childhood before you moved over to Canada?
Yeah, you know, just born in Tonga, humble beginnings. Family didn't have much, you know, but, you know, when you're growing up in Tonga, you don't think of that much, you know, just having a roof over your head and being with all your family around. Because in Tonga, like, you know, family's like one block away or just like a couple minute drive away. So, because, you know, the island's pretty tiny. So just growing up close with family, you know, that was like everything I ever needed. But like growing up in Tonga was everything to me. Grew up playing footy because, yeah, footy down here in the Southern Hemisphere is what the NFL is to people back in America. So, you know, grew up playing footy on, you know, open fields, would even play it sometimes on like the gravel road and, you know, just, but yeah, just like the real, you know, island lifestyle, you know, that's kind of the way I was brought up. Every time, now that I'm living in America, every time I get off in the off season from the NFL, any little time I have off, I try to make time to come visit this side of the world and visit my family. So, yeah.
I love that. And are you still fluent in the language?
Still really fluent.
Yeah, nice. I guess now coming back with your accent, with your Canadian accent, is it a bit of a spin out to your family that, yeah, you're still fluent in Tonga, but when you speak English, it's that Canadian thick accent?
Yeah, because like when I grew up in Tonga, I grew up with like, you know, a lot of the kids in the neighborhood who never left the island. So like the dialect and the language stuck with me. And yeah, it always shocks my mom and dad when I go back, you know, they're always happy about it too. Cause, you know, that's one thing I think that that makes them really proud too, is that, you know, just never forgetting my roots, my language and all that. And I always try and speak it when I'm at home, even in Detroit when I'm down there, because there's a couple Polynesians on our team, so sometimes we mix it into like the English and a bit of a slang. So yeah.
Rugby league, is that what you played growing up in Tonga, or was it rugby union?
It was union. Union was what was big during my time in Tonga. Everybody wanted to get into union because, you know, the All Blacks was like the dream team, the team you kind of want to be on. And they were like the thing, the face of footy at that time. But playing footy was something that, you know, as soon as school was done, I got home, I skip homework and then just go down the block and just any field, you know. It's not the nicest looking fields, but you just find an empty field and there's about 10, 15 kids there, you know, playing, and, you know, you just hop in and join. And, you know, the funny thing is, looking back at it, is that sometimes you wouldn't have a footy, like you wouldn't have a rugby ball. Sometimes we would use like a bottle, like an empty plastic bottle or just like a coconut, and, you know, and that to us like felt like everything. So
man, yeah. I never get sick of hearing those type of stories of just those humble beginnings and using whatever you've got within your reach to have a bit of fun. And for yourself, I did mention your height and your size. Were you always massive?
No. So yeah, that's something that actually like shocked my family and my parents specifically too. So growing up, when I was born, I was 7 pounds. I was a regular size baby. I mean, you know, growing up as a kid, I was always known as the skinny.
7 pounds, is that regular size? I feel like that's massive. 7 pounds.
I feel like that's regular size because my brother was like 12 pounds when he was
born. Oh, true. Yes, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So he was actually, everyone was like, he's gonna be the next John Alonso. He's freaking, if he's that big being born. And everybody just looked at me as like, oh, he's just going to be a regular kid. And I was growing up in Tonga, you know, when I was growing up, I was just like a skinny, scrawny little kid. I really didn't hit this growth spurt or got this big until I moved to Canada. And then, so I moved to Canada when I was 10. And then I remember like my parents, I didn't visit my parents didn't come see me, or I didn't visit them for like 2 years. As soon as they came back and visited me, I was about 13 at that time. I was about like 6'2", probably already pushing like 290 pounds. I don't know what that would be in kilos. But yeah, basically I was massive. So they came and they saw, and I remember my mom freaking out and my aunt, because I lived with my aunt at that time. And she was like, what's going on with this kid? Like, she was like, you got to take him to the hospital and get him checked. Like, this isn't usual, because like she was so used to seeing me just like a small little skinny boy, and she's like, she came sees a thick, tall boy now, and she was just out of, like, couldn't explain to them, you know. But my dad somehow kind of knew it was going to happen, because my dad's side of the family, like, he knew like there was genetics on his side, and it was only in due time whether it was going to be me or my brother that was going to get it. And when he saw that, he kind of knew like, oh, he's getting the better genetics of the side of the family. And he,
so yeah. What's that? So that's, did you say 12? Age of 12, you had your growth spurt?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's we just did the math here. In, you said 290 pounds, it's 136 kilos.
Yeah.
Holy.
I was a big kid. Yeah.
an understatement. But when, and we're going to get to, you know, how you used your size into what you do now, but the reason for moving to Canada, why Canada and why at that age?
Yeah, so the reason why we picked Canada was because my mom's oldest sister, my aunt, so she left the island of Tonga around 21 years old, and she found a life in Canada. And basically she told my mom, before my mom had kids, you know, if you ever have kids and you want to send them somewhere for better education and living, you know, she was like, I'm going to be here in Canada, you can always send them here to me. And so my mom raised us in Tonga just about until we were going to reach high school. And then she sent all three of us to go live with her.
Did you have a choice to stay or go? Like, because I'm thinking, as an 11-year-old, all I want to do is just play with my friends that I've made here. I'm happy, just loving life.
No, yeah, we definitely had a choice. I would say not so much for my brother and my sister, because they left before me. Like, my mom already told both of them, you know, from the very start, you know, you two are going to go no matter what. It's like, she told them, you know, you guys would get a better life there than here in Tonga. But one thing about me and my siblings is that we're really close. And, you know, just having them already leave and then me being in Tonga by myself, like, yeah, I had my friends outside, but I always felt like when playing footy outside was done and I came home, it was always like, okay, now I'm by myself, you know, because mom and dad's working, you know. My dad would work from like 4 a.m. and come home at like 6 p.m. And my mom, same as my mom. So sometimes I'd be home alone, missing those times playing with my siblings. So then it got to a point where I kind of started begging my parents to let me move there too, okay, please.
Yeah, wow.
Because I missed them. We made the push. I moved all the way out to Canada. And, you know, it felt great reuniting with my siblings. But I'll never forget the day I left Tonga. It really hit them hard, you know, because I'm really close with my parents too. And there, as we're driving to the airport, my mom turned around and looked at me and she was like, are you sure you want to do this? And I remember looking at her, and I'm 11 years old. All I'm thinking of is like, oh, all the lollies I get to eat in Canada and all my siblings I get to see. I was like, man, I'm trying to get out of here. And then, you know, but I remember she turned around and looked and asked, you know, are you sure you want to do this? And, you know, she's teared up. And my dad, one thing about my dad and probably all Polynesians dads is that they try to be tough, right?
Yeah.
And my dad's got his aviator sunglasses on and he's driving and he's just looking forward. But I could see in the rearview mirror, he has a tear coming down as well. And, you know, and then my mom's looking at me and she's like, are you sure you want to do this? And, you know, as a kid back at that time, I was like, I think that was the first time I really felt, you know, my parents really emotional. And I just told them, you know, it's going to pay out. And then she was kind of like, okay. And then, yeah, it has, you know, I hope I've made them both super proud. So, yeah.
Man, just listening to you tell that story as if you're back there. Like, it just gave me goosebumps, the fact that you could still picture your dad with his aviators on, dungying in the front, but like, you know, still probably trying to stay staunch. And at the age of 11, to even think that you're making a decision like that at the age of 11 is crazy. And now you're over there, it's happening, and you're adjusting to new life. What was it like? What were the challenges that you faced straight away and not seeing your parents? But you had your siblings around you and your auntie.
Yeah, you know, the challenges were hard. You know, going to high school in Canada is different. The thing is, when I made the move, all my siblings and my aunt, they were busy doing their own stuff too in their life, right? Like, my aunt still had to go to work to make sure she provided for me and my brother and sister, and my brother and sister still had to go to school because they were in uni at that point. So my first day of school, I had to take myself there. And that was hard because like first day of high school is like a big, monumental thing in like a child's life, right? And when I got off the bus and walked to high school, and like all the parents are lined up with their kids and they're like taking pictures and kissing them, you know, just feeling of like, man, I miss my parents, you know, like I wish they were here to take me to my first day of high school, you know. So that was like that really hit me hard. And it just like, I remember like crying, walking into the school, and then getting into the school is a whole nother thing. Like, schools in America and Canada are massive. So like, it's like, now I got to find my classes, navigate my way. And as a little Tongan boy at that time, you know, like broken English, trying to just grab anyone on the hallway and ask him like, where is this English class? Like stuff like that. So like, yeah, definitely hit hard at first. And I remember, you know, just, I came back from high school that first day, I was telling my siblings how it sucked. And I was like, I wish mom and dad was here. And I called my mom and I was like, man, like deport me back here to Tonga.
Oh, mate. With sport, let's get to American football. Like, how did that come about?
Yeah, so my first day at school in Canada, right? I remember like talking to the athletic director in my high school. I was like really happy because that's like one of the first things I wanted to do coming was like join a rugby team. I asked him, you know, if there's a rugby team in the high school. And I remember the athletic director looked at me and she was like, what's rugby? And I was like, a kid coming from Tonga watching, you know, like the All Blacks, Jonah Lomu, like everything's rugby to me. Like, rugby's basically life. And I remember her saying that. I felt like so disrespected. I was like, man, how do you not know what rugby is? And then, you know, I kind of like briefly explained to her, like, it's a contact sport and all that. And she was like, oh, well, if you're looking for a contact sport, we don't have rugby, but we do have what is called American football. That was kind of like my introduction to it. One day she just like took me to the field and showed me the team practicing. And I remember seeing them practice with like their helmets and their pads. And, you know, I'm just used to playing on like little ugly fields with rocks and just falling on them, thinking nothing.
with a coconut as a ball.
Yeah. And I'm like, man, why are these guys wearing helmets and pads? Like that's kind of soft. But then she was like, yeah, this is the contact sport here in North America that we play. And then, you know, I had no other choice. And I was like, I'll run with it.
rugby league and rugby union players, I guess there's some natural crossover of talent, but they always talk about it is such a different game. What you need to learn, your routes, everything about it. From when you first started, what was the immediate impact that you had that of your strengths, of your Tongan strengths that suited American football? And what else did you feel like, wow, this I'm out of my depth here?
I would say, like, you know, what made my transition into football easy from coming from Tonga was, you know, one, the physicality. Because, you know, in Tonga, like when I played footy there, I always played with the older kids. Because, you know, like, there was just something about me growing up was like, you know, I always felt like, you know, when I played against kids my age, I felt like I always bullied them. But physicality, like, that was nothing. Like, I didn't shy away from that. And, like, that's one thing, like, my coaches at my high school liked about me. You know, like, his technique, they would look at me and they'll be like, his technique is awful. His hands are awful. But you tell him to run through someone, like, he'll run through someone and he'll plow them over. Like, he's not scared to do that. So that's one thing they always appreciated of me when I first came in. And the thing with football is that if one person messes up, like, the whole thing is just going to collapse. Like, everybody needs to be on the same mind, on the same level. And, like, the flow has to be good because if one person messes up, that prevents us from moving on or scoring a touchdown, something like that.
Man, I love it. I could listen to you talk about that all day. But the, you know, you've gone into the college system and then you've been drafted to the Detroit Lions. What was that like? What was that feeling like? Just watching the video and just seeing you take that phone call that, yep, you are the pick and you're off to the Lions. How was that whole experience?
It was crazy, the college experience. I went to college in Canada, and, you know, to make it to the NFL, most people will go, they attend college in the United States, you know. So I took kind of like a different path. But, like, I always told myself and my family from day one, I was like, look, I'm going to make it to the NFL one day, whether it's this path or that path, doesn't matter to me. Ultimately, the reason why I chose to stay in Canada was because, like, the head coach of my college, he was like a father figure to me. Because he knew my story, because, like, when I moved to Canada, I didn't have my parents with me. So he kind of, like, when he was recruiting me out of high school, he kind of stepped up and was, like, that father figure role to me. And so it was a no-brainer for me to stay in Canada and attend that college. But, yeah, I remember, you know, like, all the doubts from people, you know, when I decided to take that path, everybody was like, well, good luck on trying to get a sniff from the NFL at this point. You know, everybody was like, you're not gonna make it at that point. You know, I just kept my head down, kept working, because, you know, that's one thing, you know, my dad taught me, and Paulie and Polynesian dads too, is like, always just be humble, or just work on your craft and silent and just let the people talk. And that's kind of just what I did. And then it paid out. And then I remember I told mom, dad, there's a possibility of me being drafted. And I remember my parents, they didn't even know what the hell a draft was. they're like, go ahead, draft.
Go ahead, and draft.
I was like, oh man, I gotta explain this to you guys. I was telling them it's like a huge point in, like, a football player's career, and they were like, oh, okay. And then they came. I remember they came, and, you know, and then the day of the draft, you know, we're all in, like, our traditional Tongan clothing, and you know, and then we're all sitting there, not even like an hour, maybe like 45 minutes into the draft, my phone rang, and then, like, I pick it up, and it's the Detroit Lions head coach, Coach Campbell. And, you know, I pick it up and, like, I'm already, like, mumbling and, like, tearing up, because I'm like, I knew this is the team I was going to go to. And he just told me, you know, Giovanni, welcome to the Detroit Lions. And, you know, I couldn't speak. And then he just started passing the phone around the room to all the other coaches. And, you know, I'm just saying, thank you. And as soon as I hung the phone up, I told everyone I was going to Detroit, and my dad, if you see in my video, he's like, he jumps off the couch and he's like clapping, and he's like, it's as if seeing him being a child, and I've never seen my dad like that before. Yeah, it's just like a wave of emotion. I mean, it was great. I had all my close friends, and my girlfriend was there. It was just like, it was an amazing moment. Definitely a moment I'll never forget in my life.
What an incredible story. That's unreal. Well, finally, there's Jordan Mailata. He's just won a Super Bowl ring, Samoan heritage. There's yourself coming through Tongan heritage. And I know there's a lot more out there. What would be your bit of advice that you'd give to anyone in the Pacific Islands about taking that leap of faith and chasing a dream, and, you know, anything can happen if you have a crack?
Yeah, just one, you know, remember, you're always doing it for family. You know, you're never doing it for yourself, always doing it for family. There's many sacrifices your family does. And not only that, but just always believe in your dream. You know, as a kid from Tonga, you know, when I grew up in Tonga, I told everybody I was going to be on the All Blacks, and everybody was like, "You on the All Blacks? Hell no!" But you know, as a kid, you know, have those big dreams. Even when I moved to Canada and I started my first crack at football, you know, I told everyone I'm going to be in the NFL one day, and they were like, "Masi, you can barely get in a stance, you know," and like, you know, like stuff like that. Never listen to that. Always stick to your dream, and just as soon as you give 100% into it, and just do it for the family. That's all you ever need. You just need the belief from your family and yourself. Everyone else, just let them do what they want.
Well, Giovanni, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat with you. Your story was incredible. It's gonna impact so many out there when they get to listen to it, man. So ofalahi atu to you, your family, and the rest of your career, man. I hope you have a long one in the NFL. Much love.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for having me again. See you guys later.
Malo lele, pokohingoa, tana pulata, and you're listening to Nisian Footy on ABC Australia.
Give me three answers for this one.
Yes, each Monday we finish our show with Gimme Three, our game of categories. 3 points up for grabs each week. And Sammy, you will be asking me the three questions. Give me three, yes. But before we get started, the score is 15-12 my way. The loser at the end of the year has to shout the host and their partners a spa day, dinner, the works. So
yeah, that's going to be an expensive day for one of us, that's for sure. We'll see how that unfolds. And because of that in mind, and it's 15 to 12, I had to make this give me three. A little bit harder this week, T.
I bet you did.
Okay, you ready for it?
No.
Okay, here we go. Give me three current professional Pacifica coaches, not including Tana Umanga, all right? I'm going to exclude him, all right? Who have played Super Rugby in the past.
Totai Kefu.
There's one. Perfect.
Carmichael Hunt.
No, in rugby.
He played Super Rugby.
Oh, coaches in rugby.
You said coaches.
Three current professional Pacifica coaches, not including Tana Umanga, who have played Super Rugby.
Okay.
And I've got to probably pay that, see? There it is.
Super Rugby.
Should be more specific, Hunt. Damn it. Well played, sir. Where's he from again?
The Cook Islands.
Cook Islands, that's right.
Yep. He's currently coaching
looks like this has been an
South
easy one
for you. Magpies. And
give me another
the
one.
Last one, Super Rugby.
I thought you would have struggled on this one.
Is Will Guinea coaching?
Nah, he's playing.
He's still playing.
He's with Torai at Kintetsu, but as a player.
Not including Tana.
Not including Tana.
Oh, so there's New Zealand players. Okay, let me think.
Yes. If you remember back too on Friday, I said make sure you listen out for this guy's name.
I remember.
Here we go.
Did I write it down?
No, don't go back through your notes. Don't do that. Don't do that. Just. There's a few out there, actually. How's your head going there, mate?
Mate, it's awful.
Yeah. Well, it's good. We always want to get to the third one to make it a bit challenging, you know? Like
Lottie's not coaching.
Nah, he's not coaching. Yeah, talk to me. What other.
Yeah, sorry. Lottie's not coaching. See, I'm thinking all the league converts like Mike Acevo.
Definitely not coaching Mike Acevo. I've got one.
Tana.
Who?
I've got one, and you are going to hate this. Benji Marshall.
He's played Super Rugby, and he's coaching at the Tigers. It's the same as Carmichael.
It is.
I've got to give it to you, T, because it's my questioning. I didn't think of those guys coaching NRL.
Well, there you have it.
Well, these were the other names. Pat Lamb played for the Blues, coach of Bristol Bears. Phil Otiatia played for the Hurricanes, now coach of Dragons FC in Wales. Tusi Pisi, new Samoan head coach. Manu Samoa played for the Crusaders. Daniel Halangahu is the Waratahs, now coaching at the Blues. Selala Mapasua, Highlanders, coaching at Moana Pacifica.
I'll make it easy for you next one.
I can't believe. Well done. Well played, sir. But that is our time up. Tell your friends about Nisian Footy. Well, see, we're not on this Friday. It's Easter. So
not on next Monday because it's Easter.
It's a Monday.
And not on the Friday after because it's Anzac Day. You get to spend some time with your wife because I'm sure she misses
you. I'm in Fiji, so it's all good. I'm still away. But we'll see you when we see you. This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.